Good morning, welcome to the weekend edition with Barry White here in studio today. Again, between 10 and 12 coming up on today's show, we're going to be talking to Laura Linnett. She's a crime journalist and author. We're going to be talking about her new crime novel, Paper Girl. Also in the show, we'll be talking to Letterkenny man James Doherty about his new film project, which he hopes to direct this summer in Ireland. He's been part funded by Film London, but is running a fund to campaign it to help him get the project off the ground. We'll also be talking to Bridget McGeehan Malloy in relation to her son Noah. Bridget found out that Noah had suffered a prenatal stroke, which an MRI scan confirmed at 11 months. Also on the show, we'll have Jamie Doran's dad. He'll be talking to us about circular football. It is something he has come up with. And we'll also have Donegal Town man James McDade on the show. He's challenged social welfare about age discrimination regarding the payments that he's been receiving. That's all coming up on today's weekend edition. But first, as usual, we'll go through the morning's newspapers. We'll begin with the Irish Independent first. In the front of the Independent, now coalition considers prenup agreement law. The government is taking first steps towards bringing in a new law to recognise prenuptial agreements for marrying couples, the Irish Independent can reveal. This week, the High Court decided that a woman is entitled to €18,000 monthly maintenance and two homes worth €3.3 million after her extremely dynamic businessman husband admitted to repeated and continuing adultery. However, in future, couples may be able to agree on the potential split of assets before they marry if Justice Minister Francis Fitzgerald finds the grounds to bring in prenup legislation. Although no decision has been taken as of yet, the minister has begun investigating what impact prenups would have on families. Also in the Independent front page, SideServ liquidator to carry out IBRC review. The same senior accountant who was in charge of distributing the controversial €5 million pay to former shareholders of SideServ in 2012 is being appointed to review the sale of the company and other IBRC deals. As SideServ PLC's liquidator back in 2012, KPMG accountant Kieran Wallace was in charge of making a €5 million payment to the company's former shareholders and settling other bills. That was prior to and separate from his role as special liquidator of IBRC. Also in Independence, terrorist cell was planning an attack on Vatican. That is by Nick Squires, the Rome correspondent for the Independent. Italy dismantled an alleged Islamist terrorist network with links to Al-Qaeda yesterday, claiming the extremists had planned to attack the Vatican. Italian authorities said the network included two men who were bodyguards of Osama bin Laden before he was killed in a raid by US Special Forces in 2011. Early morning raids were carried out across the country. Nine suspects were arrested while another nine were being sought, three of whom were believed to be in Italy. All were Pakistanis and Afghans. Investigators said the suspects belonged to an organisation dedicated to transnational criminal activities inspired by Al-Qaeda. There you go. And also in the Independent, despite denials, talk of plot against Pope Francis refused to go away. That is regarding that story also. Also in the Independent, as we go on, in the SideServ controversy, double page spread in the Independent. You often see on social media all week, especially Twitter, people saying that the tabloids are not covering the SideServ controversy and especially the Independent, but there's a double page spread. Pages 4 and 5 here today. Angry Dukes insists nothing untoward in deal. Former IBRC boss resents suggestion of criminality. Former IBRC bank chairman Alan Dukes has insisted nothing untoward will be found in a review of the controversial €45 million sale of the company SideServ. Opposition politicians say the deal cost taxpayers €105 million, and after 3 days of intense controversy, Finance Minister Michael Noonan ordered a review of all IBRC deals over €10 million. However, in a special hour-long press conference in Dublin yesterday, Mr. Dukes, the former Fine Gael leader and finance minister, said he deeply resented and was scandalised by any suggestion of criminality being involved in the 2012 deal. Also, SideServ controversy in this double page spread. There's the main players. Michael Noonan, the government, and Minister Noonan in particular, has come under increasing pressure over the controversy. Then there's Alan Dukes. Mr. Dukes was the chairman of IBRC at the time of SideServ's sale. Dennis O'Brien, Mr. O'Brien's company Millington, bought SideServ from IBRC Mr. O'Brien has said he was merely the buyer and did not know what was going on with the other offers. Then there's Walter Hobbs. Mr. Hobbs was the independent expert tasked with overseeing the deal. Mr. Hobbs has said a 100 million euro debt write-off was required due to the condition of the company's finances. Mike Ainslie. Mr. Ainslie was the chief executive of IBRC at the time of the deal. John Moran. Mr. Moran was the secretary general of the Department of Finance at the time of the deal. Catherine Murphy. Mrs. Murphy is an independent TD who has diligently pursued the matter both via Freedom of Information and in the Dáil. And Kieran Wallace. The government has moved to quell the Sideserve controversy by asking IBRC's liquidators Kieran Wallace and Eamon Richardson to examine the sales by IBRC in which the write-off was valued at 10 million euro. Also, Coalition's best hope was at the Revue Parks controversy after months of relatively plain sailing with a slow but steady rise in the Coalition's poll numbers in the back of the strong economic figures. Fine Gael and Labour have suddenly been hit by a storm surrounding the sale of Sideserve. There has been some respite for them in the past couple of days. Firstly, with the appearance of Walter Hobbs, who oversaw the Sideserve process on primetime. And then yesterday by the authorities, Alan Jukes, when he brought a strong performance at his press conference. That's by Shane Coleman. You can see that on page 5 of The Independent today. Anything else in The Independent? Just go through here. Courts criticised by safety group over penalty points lapses. A road safety group report has criticised the district courts for failing to ensure that motorists convicted of traffic offences have points applied to their driving licences. The report by Park, which is a Donegal-based group we often talk to Susan Gray in the newsroom, highlighted alleged failings by both the judiciary and court staff. The group says it has based its criticisms of information gathered from observing 26 district court sittings across 9 counties between September 2014 and March of this year. I've actually spoke to Susan Gray about this on quite a number of occasions on the phone. Its findings have been sent to the Road Safety Authority and the President of the District Court, Rosemary Hogan. The group has also written to each district judge expressing concern at a lack of consistency in the application of road traffic laws. One of the group's main concerns is that many motorists are escaping points by failing to hand over their licences in court, which is required by law. Also, The Independent, I'm just going through the pages here, anything else of notice? 340 dogs and 11 horses rescued from a puppy farm. This is on page 14 of The Independent. Horrid story of animal cruelty. The ISPCA has called on the government to allow it to carry out unannounced inspections of breeding sites after the charity saved 340 dogs in an unprecedented rescue mission. The animals, along with 11 horses, were recovered from a breeding farm in County Carlow over a 9-day period. Quite distressing pictures if you're an animal lover. Even if you're not an animal lover, they're distressing pictures. McGuinness, Fianna Fáil rushed out policy ahead of Ardaish. Fianna Fáil's John McGuinness has rounded on his own party for rushing out policy to stave off criticism ahead of the Ardaish in Dublin today. Mr. McGuinness also blasted Fianna Fáil's senior officials who believes hold too much power and fail to listen to grassroots members who want to see the party modernised. The Public Accounts Committee chairman called for a more inclusive parliamentary party and condemned the current structure in which some TDs are more equal than others. So that's the Fianna Fáil Ardaish, which is underway. I'm sure there'll be more on that in the rest of the papers, but we'll go on to the Irish Times. The front of the Irish Times today, a picture of Michael D. Higgins and Prince Charles and Prince Harry. Of course, the anniversary of Gallipoli. Both of them were over at that yesterday. The front of the Irish Times. IBRC declined to appoint senior civil servant to board, says Jukes. That's also more on that Alan Jukes press conference, which lasted an hour yesterday. IBRC rejected a proposal to appoint the Department of Finance's most senior civil servant to the board of the troubled bank, with Chairman Alan Jukes claiming it would not be appropriate. The proposal was made to the then Department of Finance Secretary General John Moran in a private conversation, according to Jukes. Also in the front of the Irish Times, the family of murdered Irish student Karen Buckley will today travel to Scotland to bring her body home. Mrs. Buckley's parents, John and Marion, received confirmation yesterday from the Irish consulate in Edinburgh that the Scottish authorities will release her body. Also in the Irish Times, $5 family to demolish Wicklow Shalley home. A family Shalley home built near Blessington, County Wicklow, must have demolished, the High Court has ruled, in order for demolition. For the wooden home, built in the gross breach of planning laws, was made by the High Court President, Mr Justice Nicholas Cairns, yesterday. Times, there's always that awkward to go through. There's not much else in there. Let me see. There was another story actually caught my attention. They're on about the Fianna Fáil Ardéis, but there's another article in the Times that'll be Miriam Lord, and it is Party Time for Older Soldiers of Destiny. It's about the Fianna Fáil Ardéis. Miriam Lord says the soldiers of destiny are out in force today for their Ardéis in the RDS. They will have a lot to say about the IBRC controversy causing ructions in government circles and beyond. Leader Micheál Martin talked about little else all week, so he'll be interested to know that when Fianna Fáil's finest are fulminating at the microphone, Micheál delivers his keynote address tonight. The platform supporting all of them has been supplied by none other than SideSurf. Isn't it a great little country all of the same? But Miriam Lord says actually this week's Ardéis, it isn't the only jamboree in Fianna Fáil this week, because there was another big gathering of the clan that took place this month. The first one happened 2 weeks ago in County Donegal, apparently, when former Fianna Fáil Minister Mary Coughlin threw a huge bash to celebrate her 50th birthday. About 300 guests joined her for dinner in the 5-star Solace Loch S Castle Hotel. We hear the proverbial great night was had by all. The event was like a reunion party for members of the last government, with former Taoiseach Brian Cowan heading the cast of ex-cabinet ministers who came along to toast their colleagues' half-century. They included Mary Hannafin, Dermot Ahern, Noel Dempsey, Mary Harney and Brendan Smith. Eamon O'Queeve, who along with Smith is one of the few survivors of the Doom Cabinet, was out of the country at the time. Willie O'Deal, he wasn't there. And Micheál Martin, another veteran of that government and, of course, the leader of the party, he wasn't there either. The party's sole Donegal representative in the Dáil, Charlie McConlow, he attended, while Mary's long-time constituency colleague and opposition Fine Gael's Denny McGinley appeared to be the only former opposition politician on the guest list. Apparently there was beef and salmon on the menu and plenty of wine. Sounds like a good party. 2 weeks ago, according to Miriam Lord in today's Irish Times. We'll go on to The Sun. As we heard in the Times, Cairns' home, murdered Karen Buckley, is finally coming home after her body was released by the Scottish authorities last night. Also in the front of the Irish Sun, AP pullout. Today is AP McCoy's last, it'll be his last ride as a jockey. I think his last ride's in the 4:50 at Sandown. Box offices is going to be his last ride as a jockey. I was actually watching a programme, it was the Claire Balding show on BT Sport, and McCoy was on the last and he was the guest. It was very good. They gave a very good interview, and he was telling the story of when he got into a taxi in Dublin with his wife. He was going to Punchestown last month, and he got in and the taxi driver mustn't have realised who was picking up. But McCoy said that this guy was saying that, oh, did you hear about Tony McCoy's retired? And McCoy said that the taxi man was acting like he had almost died, and McCoy had a look into the front seat and tap the taxi driver on the shoulder and says, I'm not dead, you know. And he says the taxi man almost died when he realised it was Tony McCoy who was in his taxi. But anyway, also in The Sun, Dafir's son and girlfriend killed. The father of a man missing with his Latvian girlfriend fear they were targeted because his son has a conscience. Willie Mongan and his girlfriend Anna Varslavian disappeared 11 days ago. Willie's dad Joseph told the Irish Sun yesterday he was asked to do something he didn't want to do and he wouldn't do it. My son has a conscience and wouldn't do it. It's simple as that. Also, Irish man killed by crane in New York site. An Irish construction worker has died after a crane arm collapsed in Midtown Manhattan. Father of two, Trevor Loftus from Limerick, was the owner of the Kenry contracting business in New York. Also in the Irish Sun, Louis took girl to room for 6 hours. That's Louis. One Direction, Louis. He star passed joints to mates one way, hey, or another. It says Louis Tomlinson took a girl to his hotel bedroom for 6 hours after passing around joints at a late night party. I don't know how that makes the front page of newspapers, but each to their own. Also, what do we have? Northern Ireland Health Minister sorry for gay slur. I'm sure a lot of people listening will have heard about Jim Wells' comments on Thursday night at a press conference. Northern Ireland's health minister has apologised after causing uproar with a statement about gay parents. Christian DUP MLA Jim Wells, it says in The Sun, you don't bring a child up in a homosexual relationship, that a child is far more likely to be abused and neglected. Mr. Wells was running as MP in South Down at the forthcoming British general election. He made the remarks at a hustings event on Thursday night. That's in The Sun today. A lot of complaints about that. Actually, a lot of opposition are calling for his resignation. But that's not going to happen. I seriously doubt it. Also in The Sun, everything you need to know about sport this weekend. Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, Southampton. It's nearly all football here they're talking about. Anything else? That's about it in The Sun. We'll go on to the next paper, which is the Irish Daily Mirror. More on that story that was in page 2 of The Sun. Gangs, deadly revenge. Man and partner missing after he refuses to carry out killing. Missing Willie Mongan and his girlfriend vanished when he refused to carry out a murder his distraught dad has revealed. It was also in The Sun. Also in The Mirror, verbal abuse by care staff. Watchdog finds home pose risks to residents. Disabled people at a care home were shouted at by staff and endured name-calling, a watchdog revealed yesterday. The Health Information and Quality Authority said residents and employees at St Anne's Centre for the Disabled in Tipperary were left highly vulnerable. It added no staff were present during an inspection who could use hands-on restraints, including so-called figure four holds. Also more story, or more on that story of missing Willie Mongan in pages 6 and 7. Huge fires light up mountains. The dramatic video still shows a massive blaze riding through a mountain range. In spectacular drone footage, flames can be seen spreading over the grounds of Kilworth Army Barracks near Mitchellstown in County Cork. We've had plenty of our own wildfires and gorse fires here in County Donegal during the dry period as well. There was must have been a dozen in a period of about a fortnight. A man charged with murdering Karen Buckley by attacking her with a spanner and strangling her was in court for a second time yesterday. Alexander Pacto was accused of then covering her body in corrosive substances and putting her in a barrel. And there's more on Karen's body coming home today. Anything else? I won't quit my mates. Hammond rules out return. Richard Hammond has joined co-presenter James May in confirming he will not return to Top Gear following Jeremy Clarkson's sacking. Speaking for the first time about leaving the show, he said he had no plans to quit my mates. I was reading yesterday online, they're talking about maybe Top Gear going to Netflix in a multi-million pound deal. It would make sense, wouldn't it? Because Top Gear has a global appeal. I think 350 million people watch it worldwide, and Netflix has got that worldwide appeal. Jamie and Dakota have sequel roles tied up. Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson are to spice up cinemas again when they return for the 50 Shades of Grey sequels. The pair will reprise their lead roles as kinky billionaire Christian Grey and his love interest Anastasia Anna Steele, to the delight of fans. We will have Jamie Dornan's dad on the show later, talking about circular soccer. He won't be talking about 50 Shades of Grey. Also, in the front of today's Irish Daily Mail, 1 in 10 AIB staff is still on €100,000 plus. Almost 1 in 10 employees at a taxpayer-owned AIB were earning more than €100,000 at the end of last year. The bailed-out bank's own figures show that 1,092 of its staff had remuneration packages of over 100 grand, just over 9% of the 11,000 workforce, and 77 were on between 200,000 and 300,000. That seems pretty excessive, doesn't it? Anything else in the Irish Daily Mail? More on the Alan Jukes story, more on the SiteServe story. It's certainly been covered in the papers. You hear a lot of people on Twitter, as I said, saying that it doesn't get covered, but there's certainly a lot. Maybe it's people who have a problem with what angle the tabloids or the broadsheets are going with, but there's certainly it's getting a lot of coverage today. Anything else in the Irish Daily Mail? More on Top Gear. Brains behind Top Gear says BBC wanted a woman to front the show, apparently. The meddling BBC had tried to force Top Gear to have a female presenter even before Jeremy Clarkson was forced out. Its long-standing executive producer has claimed Andy Willman, who is regarded as the brains behind the show, said BBC executives were worried about having three middle-class public schoolish blokes of a certain age as hosts. But I'm sure fans of Top Gear will say that's what makes the show, is the three hosts. Would it work with a female host? I don't know. I don't watch it all the time. I'd watch it the odd time if it was a repeat on BBC Three or something, so I don't watch it religiously, but people who are fans of it, would they want a female presenter, or is it just it has to be those three guys? It has to be Richard Hammond, James May and Jeremy Clarkson. I'm sure a lot of people would say that. More Lucinda Creighton writing about the side serve and her column as well in the Irish Daily Mail. But we'll go on to your final newspaper. And it's the Irish Daily Star for this morning. Priest abused me at first confession. Sicko jailed after attacking schoolgirl. That's in the front of the Irish Daily Star today. We'll go on to page 4 to see more on that. Vile priest caged for abusing girl. A retired priest who sexually abused a young girl while hearing her first confession has been jailed for 2 years. John Callan, 76, from Rossmore in West Cork, has a number of previous convictions for similar offences. Cork Circuit Criminal Court heard he was invited to a primary school in 1989 to hear first confessions. While in a area hearing the girl's first confession, he put his hand into her underwear and digitally penetrated her. Well, he was got yesterday anyway. Also, more on that horror puppy mill. We were reading that in one of the other papers. That's also in the Irish Daily Star. We'd love to smoke joints with 1D Louis. Also more on that. Appeal for info as teen girl missing since 1998. That's also in the Irish Daily Star. The parents of a woman who has been missing since 1998 will make a major TV appeal for information on crime call on Monday night. Popular 18-year-old Deirdre Jacob was last seen shortly after 3 p.m. on July 28th, 1998, inside the gate of the family home in Rosebery, Newbridge, County Kildare. Despite intensive searches and appeals, there has been no trace of Deirdre, but Dad Michael and Bernadette have refused to give up hope. Deaf ship captain and passenger as 900 died. I've seen this in the news yesterday as well. The captain of the capsized Mediterranean migrant boat has denied the tragedy was his fault, despite claims he was drunk as he crashed into a cargo ship. Mohammed Malak said he was a migrant like everyone else. He said he was not in charge and when the vessel sank, which killed more than 900 people. Also, the brother of a high-profile TD has appeared in court to face the charge of sexually assaulting a teenage girl. He faces a possible jail term of 14 years if found guilty. The man, who's in his late 40s, is alleged to have sexually assaulted the girl in a pub in the west of Ireland last year. He cannot be named for legal reasons. Adam plays on. Sunderland ace Johnson kept in the squad despite child sex charges. That's Sunderland winger and Adam Johnson. He's been charged with child sex offences, but Sunderland are going to keep him on. Soccer club Sunderland sparked fury yesterday when they announced Adam Johnson will carry on playing for them while he's awaiting trial on child sex abuse charges. I suppose the club are saying he's innocent until proven guilty, I suppose. Cairn body back home today, as we've also been reading the parent pictures of the distraught parents of Cairn Buckley there. Anything else? Simon Wood has been named the winner of MasterChef in a final which the judges said had raised the benchmark for the competition. I just ruined that for myself because I missed it last night. I was at my friend's birthday party, so I missed MasterChef, but I watched it on Thursday night. So Simon Wood won it. He beat off tough competition from Tony Rod and Emma Splitzer to claim the MasterChef trophy. To win the title, Wood judges Greg Wallace and John Turud with pigeon serve with three types of carrots, mushrooms, watercress and you. Tarot praised the dish as bang on the money in every way, shape and form. I hope I haven't ruined that for anybody else, but reading that out. I just want my boy back, dead or alive. The father of missing man Willie Mongan yesterday pleaded for his return, saying, I just want my boy back, dead or alive. We've been going through that story as well. One Punch brother to return home. Irish man Barry Litter was last night preparing to return home from Australia with his family after he was given a 13-month suspended sentence for assaulting his brother in Sydney. The county Antrim man caused serious head injuries to his younger brother. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the videos. Him and his brother got into a bit of a scuffle and he punched his brother. A one-punch attack left his brother in a coma. But he was given a 13-month suspended sentence yesterday, and then the brothers were seen embracing in the court yesterday. But they're going to be coming home to Antrim now. I suppose brothers, families fall out, don't they? But it just shows you the dangers of one punch. You always hear the police warning, don't you, about one punch can kill. In the entertainment column of the Daily Star, I applaud Robert Downey Jr. for taking a stand against Channel 4 news journal Krishnan Gurumurthy's line of questioning during his interview for the Avengers Age of Ultron. He was there to promote the film and he was right. it was not a Diane Sawyer type interview. He looked stunned when the journo started asking him about the family. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the coverage in Channel 4. Robert Downey Jr. got up and walked out. Most people are on Robert Downey Jr.'s side, but I'm not so sure. I'm sure he didn't know. He didn't go onto a Channel 4 news interview thinking this was just a film promotion. He's bound to have known from seeing interviews in the past that there was going to be tough questions asked. So I'm sure he knew what to expect. But anyway, also, Irish just love to crack a smile. Apparently, Ireland is in top 20 happiest nations on earth, ahead of the UK. Ireland is the top 20, is in the top 20 list of happiest places on earth, beating the UK, France, and Germany. The third annual World Happiness Report ranks Ireland's 18th, a distance behind Switzerland, which is number one. Iceland and Denmark are the top three places. There you go. So let me see the top 10. Switzerland, Iceland, Denmark, Norway. So Canada, Finland, Netherlands, Sweden and New Zealand. So there you go. We're one of the happiest places, apparently. I wonder how they judge that. Is it just by people smiling, or I don't know. That's it from the newspapers, really. Look at the text messages, any messages coming in. Someone regarding the Times story about Mary Coughlan's party. Of course, Brian Cowan was there, sure wasn't he. I'm not even going to read the rest of that. But of course, Brian Cowan was there because she was his deputy. Also, please wish Una McGrory from Port Salon a very happy birthday from Kitty, Grace and Rachel. It's now 25 minutes to 11. We'll take a commercial break. Okay, welcome back to the Weekend Edition. I'm joined in studio now by Bridget McGeehan-Malloy. Bridget, thanks for coming in. Good morning.
Thanks, Barry.
Bridget, tell us about your son Noah. You found out that Noah had suffered a prenatal stroke after an MRI scan confirmed this after 11 months.
After 11 months. Probably at the start, at 4 months, we kind of started to notice, Noah would only lie to one side. He'd only ever lie to his left side. And that was probably our first concerns. He was always a very sleepy baby, but, you know, it wasn't overly concerning at that stage. By the time, though, he was 6 months, at that stage, all babies will be grabbing for items, but he would only actually grab with his left hand. I did take him in front of, medical professionals at that stage, but it wasn't a major concern at that stage. It was like, we'll wait and see. By the time, though, he was about 8 months, his right hand was completely fisted and we could barely get it opened. Initially, when we were sent before a paediatric consultant, they thought initially it might be nerve damage. There were no concern of his leg or anything at that stage. Probably a month after that, we started to see physios then, and they were probably the first people that kind of initiated that it may be coming from the brain, not from the nerves. And as you said, at 11 months, it was confirmed by an MRI scan that he had sustained a stroke before he was born. Now, it wasn't really highlighted to us probably until a few months later that it was probably around 37 weeks or that. Now, in saying that, I had a normal labour. He was only one day over and everything went completely smoothly. But, sometimes there are actually no causes for these strokes. They highlight a few different areas. It can be like blood clotting disorders or, kind of heart disorders. But we've ruled everything out on that. That's basically where it came from.
Must be very tough to get that kind of news.
It was, he would have had his MRI on the Friday and we were told he wouldn't get the results probably for about 10 days. And it was just the Tuesday after that there, I received a call from the hospital asking for myself and my husband, Martin, to go out, that the paediatric consultant wanted to talk to us. And initially, I just knew this wasn't good news. So I said, no, can you get him to ring me? I couldn't wait till the next day. And I always remember his first words was, and I always remember them because I remember I just was in complete and utter shock. He said, Noah has sustained substantial brain damage. And I was saying, I knew exactly what substantial meant, but I kept saying, what do you mean by substantial? It was kind of a bit of a shock to take in it initially. We had some suspicions of it from different things that was said, along the journey, but you still are never prepared for it when it's actually said, and he kind of outlined then that it was, that there were damage to the left part of the brain and quite a lot of it, so which meant was going to affect his motor side completely on his right, also could be other areas, you know, his eyes, his swallowing. You know, at that stage, at 11 months, it was very unknown. And basically, it was wait and see. That's basically what it was. Like, you know, you just had to wait to see how the brain would repair itself. The only thing with children taking strokes compared to adults, their brain is still developing. So, you know, they're very plasticity. Like, they can... one of the words that was used to me, that they could actually rewire their brain from the good side of their brain. Like, so that was, I suppose, kind of comforting in a way, that you knew that you could do something more, you know, but it has been hard work all the way.
When you're saying there that the word substantial kind of stood out, is it almost like you didn't want to believe it, or?
Well, I knew what substantial meant. I knew it was like that meant an awful lot. Or quite a lot. And I kind of thought, well, it's only going to be a small amount. I had a wee boy that was quite happy, was very interactive, was healthy. And I thought substantial just sounds so dramatic and so drastic. Like, but that's probably why it stood out in my mind so much. Like, but.
And I was just reading perineal strokes. It occurs in one in every 2,800 live births.
Yeah, that's like, quite.
I was thinking when I was looking through the notes that Yvonne gave me, I just think, a stroke in a child.
I know, everybody says that.
That must be very, very rare.
It is. Aye, it is. Well, it's not as rare, I suppose, as what people say. Like, you know, because sometimes people will say, you know, what's happened to him, or when you say a stroke, you know, when you're looked at like you've two heads, like, you know, I never heard of a child taking a stroke. But it is more common. And saying that, though, like, you know, one of the initial things that was said to us, like, he is a stroke survivor. Like, they don't all survive strokes. That's the other thing. It's one of the top 10 causes in infant, you know, deaths as well. Like, so I suppose that's the other sad side to it.
Yeah,
you know?
And suppose the luck, maybe on the one hand, I mean, Noah's lucky to be here.
I'm completely grateful he's here. He is amazing little boy. He's so determined. He's so stubborn. And we're very, very grateful to have him. Like, he's probably changed our lives completely, but it's changed for the better. Like, it has been hard work. It's been very hard work, but the results and what you see and what you put in is, it wouldn't be described in words, you know.
What age is Noah now?
He will be 3 now in August. Now, he didn't walk till he was just before he was 2. Like, there were initial concern about his walking, because obviously due to balance, you know, his whole right side was affected. Obviously, his upper half was affected more than his lower half, but there were big concerns about his walking. But thankfully, through a lot of hard work and a lot of prayers and whatnot, he did start to walk last year. Like, he still drags his leg a bit. The main thing we're probably focused on now is getting hand function back, and also his speech. His speech has been affected as well.
Be a lot of physio work and stuff?
A lot of physio, OT, speech. He also goes to a lot of clinics. You know, he wears like a sleeve on his right hand just for recognition. And, you know, for a long time, the worst thing with Noah was, compared to an adult taking a stroke, if me or you took a stroke in the morning, we would know we had a right hand. And our brain would have recognised we had a right hand. With Noah, because of that damage before he was born, it took Noah a long, long time to actually realise he had a right hand. He used to hold it down behind his back. And sometimes if you would lift it up and show it to him, he was in shock. What was it like? So his brain didn't respond to or click that he actually had a right hand. But it's through a lot of repetition. It's repeating, repeating, repeating. And you're nagging and nagging at the brain the whole time. And it takes time, but it eventually starts to respond.
So would a lot of parents, maybe, could their child have a stroke and they mightn't even notice?
Well, that's the thing. Probably the big telltale signs for me was you never should have a child that has a preference to one hand until they're 18 months. That's the big thing. You know, when I went initially, and it's not due to anybody's fault, they just said, well, wait and see, like, we'll keep an eye on it. But at that stage, Noah was only using his left hand. He would not use his right hand, no matter what you done, no matter what prompting, he would not use his right hand. And it's not a case that, you know, you should say, well, maybe he's going to be left-handed. At 6 months, he should not have a preference, as they state, you should not have a preference till you're 18 months. So that's a big telltale sign. Or even if you find stiffness or anything in the hand, usually with strokes, probably the upper half is more severe than the lower half. It's the same in adults. It's just wherever it happens in the brain, but more so the hand and the arm gets more affected probably than the leg. So like, I would have noticed stiffness in that arm probably when he was a baby, but it's not something you would have, you know, worried about. Maybe you just thought, you know, you didn't think at the time, like, you know, because he wasn't my first baby either. I already have an older wee boy that I like, and it just wasn't something I was concerned about. Mm. You know, I just, as I said, it was the reaching. That was the first initial, and the fisting, a fisted hand. Now, babies do keep their hands fisted, but after 6 months, they're starting to reach with them. So that's the same.
But I suppose a lot of new parents are not going to think, oh, my child has had a stroke, because you don't put child and stroke
No, because as I said, even if you say out to anybody, you know, anybody general, and they say, what happened to me, and you say a stroke, like, you know, you see initial shock on their face, like, you know, a baby had a stroke, you know, or even a young child had a stroke, but it does happen. It does happen.
I suppose it's more important to get the information out there.
That's
for people
the more, most important thing. Like, May is Pediatric Stroke Awareness Month. Like, so it's basically just for the signs and, you know, early intervention. Like, as I say, when he first initially got diagnosed as having a stroke, and further a few months down the line, because of the damage that was done to his brain, his full diagnosis is cerebral palsy hemiplegia, which means half body paralysed. Now, not paralysed, but weakness. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, when you get that, you know, when I got that news, I kind of thought, where do you go from here now? Like, but early intervention, like, as I said, he's very young, his brain is still developing, and there's so much that can be done. So much, like, and, you know, like, his good side of his brain can rewire to the bad side of the brain, and that has definitely come on, definitely, like.
Well, Bridget, thanks for coming in. We wish Noah all the best and wish you all the best. Thanks for coming in.
All right.
Things down.
Okay, welcome back to the Weekend Edition. It is 10 minutes to 11 now. On the show, we have news journalist Laura Lynette. You're also an author, Laura. You have a new book out. You're going to tell us about it. Thanks for joining us in the show.
Hiya, nice to speak to you this morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Now, Laura, Paper Girl, what's it about? Now, it's a fiction, but you've also worked in that sort of crime kind of background as a journalist. But is it a fiction based on kind of true events, or where did the idea come from?
It's a crime fiction book. I started writing it 4 years ago in Buncrana, actually, during a period of a time out of work. And I just got the idea on the beach one day. I was like, I always wanted to write a book, so I thought, why not do it? And I love crime, I always did, ever since I was probably too young to be reading and watching crime. But so yeah, that's where the idea came from, just because I always wanted to write crime. But yeah, I've worked a lot on the crime beat, if you like, in journalism. And I met some colourful characters over the years, and some of them helped shape the characters in this book, definitely.
So what characters are shaped on certain people? I suppose Grace O'Brien, she's the 30-year-old journalist to the book. She's the central character in the book. Suppose she's a journalist like any other who's just craving that scoop, I suppose.
She is, but the reason that I created Grace O'Brien was because I was very much aware that a lot of crime fiction and a lot of crime shows are aimed at men, and they don't have that strong female protagonist. So I wanted a woman that was, as you'd say, an every woman. Like, I was going to say like you and me, Barry, but obviously not, but like me. Like many women out there today, she's a single parent. She's looking for love as well. And she finds it in the very wrong man. And the more that their love progresses, the body count rises. So, but I really thought it was important to have a brave woman in the book, because there isn't enough of that in crime fiction.
So you're hoping, suppose, with it being a crime, it should appeal to the male audience, but then with the lead character being a woman, it should also appeal to women as well.
Yeah, definitely. Just because I think that in too many crime fiction books and in too many crime shows, for example, The Fall, I love The Fall. Gillian Anderson's character was brilliant, but then the female characters in that show were kind of somewhat objectified, and you know, they were murdered and they didn't have a hope. I wanted that female character who was like, look, I'm going to face down these gangsters and I'm going to try to solve this murder.
Yeah, I suppose you're talking about The Fall, and I've never seen The Fall, but Love Hate I would have watched, and there would have been some strong female characters in Love Hate. Like Siobhan would have been a strong character.
It is a little bit like Love Hate. I actually wrote it before I ever saw Love Hate. I started writing it before that, but it has got little similarities, as in it's got gangsters and it's based in Dublin. But the female characters in Love Hate, I didn't find them. They were kind of strong on one level, but they weren't. That they often ended up being killed or something dreadful happening to them.
Yeah.
But I wanted a character who was going to continue, and she's going to continue into another book, and hopefully another book.
Suppose in Love Hate there wasn't too many people that didn't end up killed in the end up, but
yeah, but they didn't really. They were kind of amoral characters. I wanted somebody that had a moral edge to them as well.
Yeah, I suppose with the gangsters, were you trying to show more of not a sensitive side, but show that they were a more of a humane side, is it?
I have showed that simply because I spent time with some of these characters. It was a little bit dodgy at times, but I wanted to make my book as realistic as I could by getting to know the people behind these crimes. And they did have real lives, and they had families that they cared about. But I did find that they often mistreated women, unfortunately. But I mean, we're not expecting them to be Robin Hood characters, really, are we?
So. Yeah, that's it. It's a crime novel. So, I suppose, tell us about some of the other characters. Grace meets a guy, Tyler Cox, who is, gangster. What's his character?
Well, he comes into the book because there's been a murder. An actress has been murdered and her body is found in the Wicklow Mountains. Grace jumps on the story because she's ambitious and she wants to break that big story. And this is it. It falls into her lap. Then Tyler Cox is sent by the main gangster, who's called the Priest. I'm sure the Catholics out there are going to love that, but that's just, it's kind of just to give it an Irish edge as well, that I called him the Priest. He actually did train as a priest, but he turned to the bad side. So he sends Tyler Cox to find Grace and to kind of give her a line as his contact. But that's not how it works out, and she ends up falling for him. But as she falls for him, she falls into a very dark world. But it has to happen where, unfortunately, certain people are going to be punished in the book because he's gone down the wrong road.
And without giving too much away, I suppose, but with her falling in love with a gangster, does she get used? Do they use her because she's a journalist for their own gains then, or?
They're trying to do that, but that's not how it works out in the end. We have Tyler trying to go on a somewhat of a road to Damascus, but whether he makes it or not, I can't say, you know, because people would have to read it. But it's very much a love story that's on the wrong tracks. But I do think sometimes that can happen in life, and I can think of various references in real life where that's happened, including a prison officer who fell for a criminal. I remember that being a very interesting case. So it can happen, and I just thought, what if that happened to a journalist? What would happen in the end?
Yeah, I suppose we don't want to give too much away from the book because obviously you want people to go out and buy it. But suppose crime novels, there's been so many. So what makes yours stand out? What makes Paper Girl stand out?
Well, it basically because shows like Love Hay and many books over the years, and as I've even said before, they appeal more to men. I want women to read crime fiction. I want women who maybe like Grace O'Brien are a size 16, a little overweight, trying to lose weight, single parents trying to fall in love, just ordinary women who are in careers trying to make it up and maybe the glass ceiling is just not breaking for them. Ordinary women who have an interest in crime, who can kind of relate to this character. And I think I'd like to empower women again. You know, I don't want us be constantly portrayed as a victim in crime fiction.
A lot of the book was released in January. It's been getting, I was reading the likes of Patrick O'Connell from the Irish Daily Star. It's getting good reviews anyway.
Yeah, no, it is. And his review actually meant really a lot to me because he's the journalist. I'm sure he'd hate if I said this, that I would respect most in Ireland. He's a brilliant journalist. He really is. And it's selling well on Amazon, and I'm getting a good reception, all right. I just can't wait to get the next one out, really, you know, and I hope that Bunk Planner gets behind me. And Donegal, obviously, my mum is from Bunk Planner. I used to live there, and I used to work at the Derry Journal, so I'd love to get the support of Donegal as well. And I'm looking for any shops that are interested in stocking it as well, because it's now a paperback as well.
So you've got the message out there, and you're also telling us you're steeped in it, as shown. Laura, it's approaching 11 o'clock.